Hi everyone, welcome back. I'm going to start by making a few announcements. We have updated the clicker grades. Please go on Sakai and check your grades. Again, they're under, you're going to see the grades tab. Go and check them and please email any questions you have to Eric. And you have his email address on the screen and you also have his email address on the website. We're going to have another lab on the 27th, and I'm going to send out an email a little ahead of time. But on the October 27th, please come to the lab where we had the lab last time. So it's the art building, room 118. Also, our midterm is going to be on November 3rd, which is a Wednesday. And we're going to have it here at the same time as the class. I will make a practice midterm, and you'll be able to go through it, and I'm gonna answer questions the lecture before. Any questions? I'd appreciate it if you would ask any questions you have. I'd be happy to answer them. Okay, and homework 3 is due a week from today. And I promised that I would answer questions if there are any questions. So if you have any questions, you can ask them now. Yeah. Are you looking for, so I'm going to show you where, maybe, I don't know, there's two possibilities. Either there's a problem with your clicker or there's... For some reason, the internet is not working here today, so.
It takes forever.
It does take forever. Okay, why don't you email me and tell me that you can't see your grades?
Okay.
And I'll make sure that your grade is up or try to figure it out. Or you could also email Eric, but you know what? Email me. It's a little easier. Okay. Any other questions? Maybe about the homework or clickers, whatever, before we get started?
Do you have a zero or something that would be emailed?
Email Eric.
Okay.
Did you do them on Sakai or?
It was the lab.
It was the lab, okay. Can I see that? Because there's attendance and there's extra. Email Eric. You can also copy me if you want. Just to make sure that. Anything else? No? Okay then. Okay, so let's do a few clicker questions. This is about Scratch. So what does the following code do? And if you have a computer, if you could just close it for 2 minutes, that would be great, because not everybody has one. So I would appreciate if I see all the computers. Okay, closed. Okay, so what does the following code do? The following code draws something. So what does it draw? Which one of the pictures does it draw? And the code is, you put the pen down, you move 100 steps, you turn 60 degree counterclockwise, then you move another 100 steps, then you turn 60 degrees again counterclockwise, you move another 100 steps. And let's say your sprite looks like this little turtle here. What does the turtle draw? And you have all the shapes, all the possible shapes. So please turn off your computers or close them. Thanks. So again, the turtle looks like this in the beginning, before the script is executed. stop at 2. Stopping in 5 seconds. It's stopping. Okay then. All right. So I'm gonna try to do what the turtle is doing. So the turtle is facing that way, right? This is the head and this is the body. So it's saying move 100 steps, except in a straight line, like that. And then turn 60 degrees counterclockwise. So this is the direction that it was going. It's making a 60 degree angle, but it's counterclockwise. And it's moving 100 steps. Then this is the direction that it was moving. Another 60 degrees, and another 100 steps. So that's what the turtle's going to do. Okay? Any questions? And, you know, if you have Scratch, and you will have Scratch, you're going to be able to run this script and see what the turtle is doing. Next question. This is a script that has broadcast in it. So you remember how we define something, we say when I receive, and then you can say broadcast, and when you say broadcast, the scripts, when the names are going to match, so broadcast star is going to go in here, in this script. And the question is, what is question mark? That's the question. And the script is set points to question mark, so points is a variable. And then you broadcast star and wait. And you, when you receive star, you put the pin down, and then you repeat points, point number of times, move 50 steps, and turn 144 degrees clockwise. What is question mark? A, it's points. B, it's 0, C, it's 5, D, it's 4, E, it's star. I'll stop at 2. One quarter. Right, stopping. Okay, good. Okay. So the important thing is to notice that points is a variable and it has a value stored in it. And so when you say you repeat points, the points is going to be replaced with the value that the variable has, which is, as you all said, 5. Another thing that I wanted to point out was in the homework, you have the equal gates, you have the equal 5, and you need to use the equal 5 gate to make an equal 32 gate. So we said that in order to make an equal 5 gate, the equal 5 gate takes as input 2 groups of 5 bits, and it outputs 1 bit. And the inside the gate, what it's made of, is 1 and 5 gate, which is made out of 4 AND gates, and 5 equal gates, each of which is made out of 2 ANDs, 2 NOTs, and 1 OR. Right? So then you need, for the 5 equal gates, you're going to need 10 ANDs, 10 knots, and 1 OR in total. Now, if you have equal K gate, right, equal any number, it's going to have 2 K inputs. It's going to have a K and a K bits, And it's going to output one bit, which is going to be true if the patterns are equal and false if the patterns are not equal. And it's going to be made out of one AND K gate, which is made out of K minus one gates, and K equal gates, each of which is made out of two ANDs, two NOTs, and one. Okay? So you could just apply that idea to your homework. Let's do this one. This is a repeat until question. So you have, let's say you have a script, and it's going to look prettier if you make it in Scratch, but here's just, you know, black and white. It's saying set x to 12, repeat until x equals 0, and what you do inside the repeat is two things. Play ping and wait, and change x by minus 1. What is this script going to do? And options are A, it counts to 12, B, it pings 12 times, C, it pings forever, D, when 12 equals minus 1, it stops, and E, it says the word X. Up at 120. Stopping. Okay. Good. Okay. So last time we finished the lecture by talking about loops, and we said that there's all kinds of loops. There's a repeat, there's a repeat loop, which is a fixed loop. There's a repeat until loop, which is more flexible. This is a forever loop, and we made a square turn 5 degrees, make a square turn 5 degrees, and so on. If you do that forever, it will make this pattern, but it will also not stop. And so forever loops are good sometimes, like if you make a thermostat, you want the thermostat to always check what the temperature is so it can set the temperature in your room. You don't want it to stop, right? You want it to run forever, or, you know, at least for a very long time. There's all kinds of forever loops that are good. Sometimes in programming, forever loops are not very good because you want to solve a problem and want to have a result, and if there's some forever loop somewhere, you're not going to be able to, it's not going to be able to give you a result ever because it's going to be working on it forever. If you want to limit that, if you want to only do it a few number of times, you can just say repeat 4, and what you do, you make a square, and then you turn 5 degrees, and you do that 4 times, it's going to draw 4 squares. The repeat 4 again can be written, you know, if you unroll it, it's going to show, it's going to do these things 4 times. And so we saw all kinds of loop last time, so I'm going to skip these. And we talked about recursion. Recursion is a very powerful idea. We said that it was very central in computer science. And you can control, you can make a loop that, or we can make multiple loops that unroll at the same time, basically. And so recursion is, and we said that we define something recursively if what I'm defining is in the body of the definition of what I'm defining. For example, you know, this is the box of cocoa, and if you describe this box, you're gonna have the same box in the description of the box. So the way you usually do recursion is a very good way of reducing things, reduction. So what the way it works is the following. If you always have to define when are you going to stop, because otherwise you're going to define something by its own, using its own name, and it's never going to, you're never going to be able to understand it. So the first thing you have to do is when do I stop? So for example, for the box of cocoa, you could say, you know, when the size of the box is 1 pixel, then you're going to stop. You're not going to continue drawing it. So you're going to, you know, you're going to make the lady with the tray, and then you're going to put the picture, And then, you know, there's going to be another picture on the tray in the picture, and so on, until the picture gets to one pixel. And then you stop. Otherwise, it's going to go forever, and it's never going to stop drawing. And then if the if you're not stopping, if you're still drawing the big picture, you're going to have to describe, how do I draw this big picture? And you're going to reduce it, you're going to reduce the big picture into smaller problems. You know, for example, you could say, you know, make a red background, write whatever the writing is, you know, draw the lady, then make the tray, then on the tray, draw the same picture. And so the bigger problem is going to be reduced to a whole bunch of things plus the smaller problem, which is the smaller picture on the tray. So let's give a few examples. One example that people use is computing the factorial of a number. And the factorial of a number is just 1 times 2 times 3 times 4, da da da, times the number. And these numbers can be very big. It's a function that grows very fast. But the way you can define it recursively is, you know, if you have a number, n factorial is n minus 1 factorial times n. So 3 factorial, for example, which we know by definition is 1 times 2 times 3, can be defined recursively by 2 factorial times 3. And when we stop, we have to decide, remember, we have to decide when we stop, we're stopping at 1 factorial. And we know that 1 factorial is 1 by definition. So if we say, if we see something like 3 factorial, we're going to say, the first question we're going to ask is, are we done? Can we stop? And the answer is no, because we are not done yet. We don't know what 3 factorial is. We only know what 1 factorial is. So if we're not done, we're just going to simplify the problem. And we're going to simplify it by using the definition. So knowing that n factorial is n minus 1 factorial times n, simplifying the problem is just replacing n with 3, which gives us 3 factorial is 2 factorial times 3. Now, we have the smaller problem of 2 factorial times 3, and we still don't know what 2 factorial is. So the question is now, what is 2 factorial, right? What is the simpler problem? So again, are we done? No, we're not done. We do not know what 2 factorial is. So we have to simplify it by, again, reducing it to the smaller problem, saying 2 factorial is 1 factorial times 2. So now we have the new problem of 1 factorial that we might not know what it is, but we actually do know what it is, because we are actually done. We are given that 1 factorial is 1, so that's known. We're done. We got to the smallest subproblem that we actually know how to solve. And so now we can go back and say, okay, great. So now we can compute 2 factorial, which is 1 factorial times 2. 1 factorial is 1, so that gives us 2. And now we know what 2 factorial is. We can go back and replace it in 3 factorial, and that gives us 6. Okay, so that is solving this problem by recursion. Again, when we program recursively, when we write scripts that run recursively, we don't actually go over all these steps. These are the steps that the computer goes through. We just say, okay, here's the definition. N factorial is this. This is what we know, and the computer solves the problem by itself. So, but that's what the computer goes through. Another example is, drawing a tree. So again, solving this problem, you just have to write this. And then the computer solves it on its own, which is very nice, because you don't have to write 1 times 3 times 3. You can just write a very short statement. It works for any number. And it's very short and nice and elegant and clear. If we want to draw a tree recursively, we can say that the tree is made out of a trunk and 2 smaller trees, the left branch and the right branch. And so that's kind of the way to make fractals. Fractals are structures that are recursive. So I don't know if any of you use a math person, and you know you're into that, but the fractals are they're a way to draw functions and mathematical structures and sets. And if you zoom into the fractal, you're going to see the smaller fractal. And then you zoom in into the fractal, and you're going to see the smaller fractal. Or broccoli is an example. Broccoli is, you know, there's a stem, and then you have the little, whatever, the little pieces, and then the little pieces are a stem and a little piece, and so on. You know, it doesn't go forever. It stops at some point, but it's a little recursive that way. So if I were to define a tree of size k, let's say we want to make it make this trunk, then if k equals 0, if the size of the trunk is 0, we don't have to draw anything. We can stop. So that's our stopping condition. If the trunk is bigger than 0, or the size of the tree, we're going to put the pen down, we're going to move k steps, and we're going to make this. Then we're going to turn 45 degrees, and we're going to make a tree that is the size of half of the size of the current tree. So we're going to have the left subtree, turn 90 degrees, so here, you're going to make the right subtree. And one example is that if the tree was size 8. And I'm going to show you exactly how this is going to work. So we're at the bottom, we start looking up, we put the pen down, we move 8 steps, and then we turn and make a tree of 4. And then we turn 9 degrees and we make another tree of 4. And that's how it works. It's automatically, you know, you might ask, oh, how did it know to make a tree of 4? Well, what's happening is that if it gets to the tree of 4, when it gets to the tree of 4, it knows that the tree of size k is move, put the pen down, move 4 steps. So that's what happens when it sees tree of 4. It's just creating a new function. It's creating a new script. It's because this is how we define the script. It's moving, it's putting the pen down, it's moving 4 steps, it's turning 4 degrees, then it's making a tree of 2, which is, again, the same thing, but on a small scale. And so that's a tree of 2. It turns 90, it makes the other part of the tree. It turns back, moves 90, turns 90, and makes the other tree. So that's how this whole thing works. And see how you don't have to say, okay, move 8, move 4, move 2, turn. You know, you don't have to do that. You just define it like that, and it automatically knows, oh, this is what a tree means, and I know how to draw it. And but you have used, in the definition of the tree, you have used the word tree in the definition of the tree. So that's recursion. And you can do, if you wanted to, you know, going back to the drawing the square and turning 5 degrees, if you use this function, see, this is a recursive script. This is a recursive definition because I'm saying, okay, right now I'm defining pattern. In the definition of the pattern, I say broadcast pattern in weight. So it's almost like, so it's calling itself. It's saying, now do the pattern. So, okay, let's see. Set size to 50, set counter to 4. So let's say I want to make 4. And I say broadcast pattern. When it goes into the pattern, it's making the square. It says broadcast square size. So it's making the square. Then it's turning 5 degrees. And so let's say it's here. It's changing the counter by 1. And then it's saying broadcast pattern again. When it broadcasts pattern, it goes up to when I receive pattern, right here. And it's doing it again. It's making another square, turned by 5 degrees, whatever. And then it's turning it. And so see how this is an infinite loop. This is not a good example, because there's no stopping condition. We don't know when this ends. We define counter to 4, but there's nowhere where we test it. And so this is going to go forever. This is the right one. It's saying something like, okay, I'm going to stop when the counter is 0. And every time I go through drawing the square, I'm going to subtract 1 from the counter. And so, you know, if I start by counter being 4, the first time it's going to become 3, then it's going to become 2 and 1 and 0. If counter is 0, it's not going to go and do the patterning. So this is the right way to do it. This has the this follows the pattern of proper recursion, which is always there's a base case, there's a stopping condition, asking are we done yet? What happens when we're done? If we're not done, we have to show how the problem is divided into smaller pieces and how those pieces are getting handled. So now we have a kind of talked about the very low level, the bits. We took the bits and made logic gates and had Boolean algebra and made all kinds of gates that make all kinds of Boolean functions. And we also talked about programming languages, which are very high in complexity. You can, with a cat, you can do, you've seen in the lab too, you can make all kinds of things. You can draw things, you can make sounds, you can make compute all kinds of math. We still don't know what's in here. What bridges the gap between simple bits, logic gates, and programming language and software and things? And so the problem was before is with the bits and stuff is that things get very complex very fast. And if you want to do something, we can make a circuit, and we saw we made the NIM5 circuit. We can make a circuit, but that circuit is only good for what we program it to do. And so we would like something that would be more flexible, and we want to move a little further from that. So remember the Christmas lights, we had the input, we had ABC, they're going through a circuit. We said new A, we define new A, new B, and new C in terms of ABC, and then they get updated, and maybe new A, new B, and new C are connected to some kind of lights, and they light up or they turn off and they turn on different lights, and this is with 1 second of delay. And we said that a real computer, this is a very simplified diagram, it's kind of the same. You get some input, and you have some circuit that updates the state of the computer, and then you have an output, and you can have all kinds of, say you want to memorize something, say you want to edit something before you save it, it's going to go into memory. So then you have access to the memory, and that memory can contribute to your input, and so on. You can use stuff from memory to make computation, and so on. And this is a very simplified diagram of a computer. And this is actually the very high level, diagram of a computer. You have the memory, then you have the CPU, which is kind of the brain of the computer. You have a unit that does math, and you have a control unit, which kind of controls what's happening in the computer and where things go. And then you have the input and the output. And the input, and the output can be it's things that you directly see or you directly touch. So the mouse, the keyboard, the display, and so on. And again, the CPU kind of deals with the math. So it has circuits that can do math very fast. And the reason why they can do math really fast is because everything's in hardware. Everything is, there's circuits that add numbers and circuits that subtract and multiply, and so everything's super fast. So, for example, if you wanted to add bits, you would probably have something like this. If you want to add, remember when we added bits, at any moment in time, you could have something like. If you wanted to make this table, it has three inputs basically, x, y, and the carry, and then you have a new carry, which is c prime, and the result that you have here. So for example, for this operation, Let me make this table.
You have x is 1, y is 1, the carry is 0, so the new carry will be 1, and the result is going to be 0. And you see that on the second to last row.
So you have to, you're going to have something like this, something like this table. And you, of course, you can make, you can figure out what the results are as a function of,
so you can figure out what these things are here, what these bits are, which are the z's, and you can figure out what these things are, which are the z primes or z ones. And you can make a truth table. You can make a circuit that actually wires that, that actually represents that. So that, and you know, you get a very complicated function, and you can use the truth table with x, y, and c to make a 16, you can make a full adder, a thing that adds 4 bit numbers or 8 bit numbers or 16 bit numbers. If your processor is on, you know, 64 bits processor, that means that it always works with two numbers that are 60, two or multiple numbers that are 64 bits each. So, you know, when they make the adder, they try to make an adder that adds 64 bits and this number is 64 bits. And so,
but you need tons and tons of, you need a lot of ands, nots, and ors. So here, for example, just to add 2 bits, you need all these things because you have 3 bits that you're adding. And so if you have just for 1 bit, you need 6 ands, 3 ors, and 4 nots. If you want to make it very efficient. So, you know, the full adder is just an adder that works with multiple bit numbers and adds them together. And so using those, you can actually make a circuit that adds 2 64, 32, or 2 16 bit numbers. So another point is that if you have a circuit that does something, let's say you had your Christmas lights and you wanted them to do something, then this is the program that we came up with. We decided that in order to make them blink this way, you have to set the new A to be old B, to the new B to be not B, and the new C to be B, old B. And so this is what it would look like. This is what the circuit looks like. You have A, B, and C as the input, and then you have a not gate here, and that's your new A and your new B and your new C. And so, you know, we said that the outputs go back to the input with a 1 second of delay, and then the outputs are also connected to the lights. And so if you do, the first light is going to be, see how we wired it here? The first light is A, the second light is B, the third light is C. That's what this means. We connected them, we connected the first light to the first, we connected the new A to the first light, the new B to the second light, and the new C to the third light. And that's going to, what's going to happen is, on the first second, everybody's false. Well, we want C to be on, right? And so, let's say they all start by being false. Going through the circuit is going to make the B true, and A and C are going to be false. And since B is going through, it's connected to the red light like that, that's going to light the red light. This is kind of the anatomy of the circuit. On the second, since the outputs are copied back to the inputs, then new A, so old A is going to be... new A is going to be copying B. And so A and C are going to be true, and they're going to light the yellow and the green light. And so on. And this continues on and on, and this is kind of how it works. Now, if I wanted to make something that is, the traveling lights, which were this program, I would have to change the whole circuit. I have to take this knot out, and I have to rewire it to look like this. So every time I want to make the smallest change in my circuit, I need to rebuild it, basically, which I don't want. What if we had something like this? New A is, this complicated, formula of A and B and C. right? If I wanted to change it, I would have to get rid of, I don't know how many ands, nots, and ors, and just change the whole thing. So this is kind of a pain. We want something that, we don't want to change the wires. We want to do some kind of programming, right? We want to just, you know, tweak the input so that we have the outputs that we want. So we are going to use something that is called machine language. And machine language kind of bridges the gap between hardware and software. It's a very simple language that the machines can understand, and that's directly implementable in hardware. And but it's, you know, it's it covers all the instructions that we need, but it's also very simple. And so here's how we're going to do it. We're going to actually come up with it. We're going to build it. There's example, you know, all computers use machine language, but we're not going to use, those are too complicated. And we're just going to use a simplified version. Now I'm going to show you kind of what is, how do people design these machine languages? How, what goes into it? But remember, we want to be very close to hardware. That's the goal. Very close to hardware, but also very simple. So we don't have crazy stuff like tons of ands and ors and nots. And so if we have something like this formula, we want to break it down into very small and simple instructions, right? We said that we want something very simple and very close to hardware. But if we get something complicated, we need a way to break it down to make it understandable in a machine language. This is just a slide to show you, you know, to show you what it's going to look like. But we're going to just walk through it and see how we can think of it and how we can build it. So this is going to be our instruction set. All the instructions in the world are going to have to be reduced to these seven instructions. And so those are going to be the legal instructions. And each instruction we're going to make out of seven bits. So no matter what the instruction is, it's going to have seven bits. We're going to have this special variable called the accumulator, which we're going to talk about it in a little while. And then we have all these other variables, A, B, C, D, all the way up to P, that we can work with. So those are the only thing that we're working with. And so each one of these instructions is going to be like a little program, like a little circuit. That's, each of these instructions is going to be directly implementable in hardware. We're going to know exactly how to make it. And so this is going back to the idea of variables, which I want you to keep this in mind. It's important because this is what I mean by accumulator A through P. They're all variables, which means that, you know, A is a name, but A can be true or false. So A is a variable. That means that it can take multiple values. And I can say stuff like A equals true, which means make A true. We can say stuff like A equals X or Y and Z, and so on. But they're all variables. Okay, so they're like a little box that holds a value. And those are all examples of variables. So if we have a complicated instruction, the way to break it down is we're going to look at it and we're going to say, okay, we need to break it all the way to ands, nots, and ors, the smallest possible operations that we can do just with ands, nots, and ors. So, you know, just looking at it, if you just look at it, and if you wanted to solve it, if you knew what A, B, and C were, what would you do first? Well, you probably go and do the parentheses first. So you probably would do B and C. Because, you know, we know that the first thing that you do is parentheses. So you're going to choose one of the innermost parentheses, and you're going to do, you know, B and C, right? And you need somehow to store, you need some way to store that value. So X is going to be, X is going to hold B and C. That's our first step. The next step is going to be, okay, now we can move to the outer parentheses. And we're going to do A and B and C. And that's going to be stored in Y. The next one is, again, a parenthesis, the small one. And, you know, if we were smart, or if I was smart, I would do, probably, I wouldn't have to do this again because I already have it stored in X. But I just wanted to make it as, you know, simple as possible. So we can store B and C again in Z, and the next step we're going to do is not A. So we're going to store that in W, then we're going to have that not A and B and C. We can compute that directly now in V, and then our result is going to be Y or V. So in Y, we have A and X, which is A and B and C. And in V, we have W and Z, which is not A and B and C. So this is the idea. This is how we're gonna, break something very complicated into small and smaller steps. And this is what you guys do too. If I give you something like, you know, X equals paren not Y and not Z, da da da. That's what you do. You look at the expression and you say, okay, I do the parentheses first. What are the parentheses? I do the ands after that. What are the ends? And you just do it step by step, and that's exactly how this is going to work. So that's our new A. So this is kind of the picture that I kind of, that's a picture in my head when I think of these instructions, when I think of the machine language. So each, we said again, each instruction corresponds to a very simple logical operation. And the accumulator is kind of a special variable that's going to, it's going to be involved in all of the operations that we're going to do. And so it's almost like, you know, our processor, you can imagine our processor as being the accumulator, which is a very small, it's a variable inside of the processor. Then it has ORs and, an OR and NOT, a NOT and an AND gate. And then it has access to these variables, which are A through P. And all the instructions in the world are going to be reduced to these very simple instructions. So if I want to do something like, I can put the B in the accumulator if I want. So I can say, okay, take whatever's in B and put it in the accumulator. I can, you know, I can draw that arrow. So the accumulator has access to all these. So again, these are all our our instruction that we're going to be working with. And I want to explain a little bit what this means. So you see here, I have stuff like accumulator equals accumulator or variable, or accumulator equals variable. What does this equal mean? Is it a question? Is it, what does this mean? And I would like to explain that right now, because that's sometimes confusing. You know, if I say something like accumulator equals C, what I mean is that there are two variables in the that I'm considering. There's the accumulator and there's C. And each one of them can contain a value, can hold a value. What accumulator equals C means is that whatever is in C, I take it and I copy it to the accumulator. So that's what the equal sign means. It's just a way to use the equal sign. It's like, a foreign language, and I'm explaining to you in this foreign language, equals means take whatever's on the right-hand side of the equal and dump it in whatever's on the left-hand side. And so this is exactly what the equal means. Okay? Any questions about that? Let's see. What is A equals accumulator do? If the accumulator equals true, so there's true in the accumulator and there's false in A, what will A and the accumulator be after the instruction above is executed? So after A equals accumulator executed. And your options are A false false, B false true, C false the true false, and D true true. I'll stop at 120. Stopping. Okay then. All right. The majority answer is the right answer. So I said that, let me go back to the previous slide. I said that what the equal sign means is take what's on the right-hand side and copy it in whatever is on the left-hand side. So each one of these is a variable. It cannot hold more than one value at one time. So when I say A equals accumulator, I'm saying take whatever's in the accumulator and copy it in A. Okay, so what is in the accumulator? True. And then copy that in A over what's already in the A. So you have to overwrite what's already in A. Right? So that means that it's going to take true and it's going to copy it into A. That's going to replace the old value. That's what I'm going to mean by equal from now on, pretty much. So another thing that I wanted to point out is that you have stuff like, I copied here all the legal instructions. Again, there's going to be homework and there's going to be questions on the exam about take this longer expression and, you know, break it down into smaller, simpler machine language instructions. And these are the only thing that you can work with. When you break it down, you can't use anything else. Okay? And it's kind of hard, but it's doable. It's always doable. So when I say stuff like, so these are all the possible instructions that you can use. There's 8 instructions. You know, stuff like accumulator equals variable is just take whatever's in the variable and dump it in the accumulator. This means, so accumulator equals accumulator or variable. So let's say you have accumulator equals accumulator or A. That means compute the right-hand side. So what is accumulator? What is A? Do the OR between them. Take that value and copy it in the accumulator. And that's what that means. Now you're going to see stuff like variable equals accumulator or variable. And that can look like you can write stuff like A equals accumulator or B. That is wrong. So V here, if V shows up twice in one instruction, it has to be the same V. Otherwise, there's no way of knowing which V those two things are. So whenever there's stuff like V equals accumulator or V, it has to be the same name of the variable. It has to be A equals accumulator or NA, or P equals accumulator or P, or B equals accumulator or B. It's not okay to use something like A equals accumulator or B, or P equals accumulator and N. Okay? So you can't use different variables. You have to use the same exact variable. All right? That's I'm just explaining what correct instructions are and what incorrect instructions are. And then, once we have an instruction, we build a 7-bit, it's going to be translated into 7 bits. And what that's going to mean is, the first, maybe I should show the previous slide, this one. The first 3 bits of the instructions are going to be what exactly is the operation you're doing. So if you use something like accumulator equals accumulator or variable, then the first 3 bits of the instructions are going to be 0, 0, 0. If the instruction is variable equals accumulator, like A equals accumulator, the first 3 bits are going to be 1, 1, 0. That's just a translation, like in with barcodes. We just take, you know, one, we translate one by a group of 5 bits. And these are the 5 bits. And so the first 3 bits of the instructions are going to give us what the instruction is. And you have the map here. That's why I made it red, because you can carry this with you and have it with you. And, you know, if you have a homework problem, you can look at it and see, oh, this corresponds to this set of 7 bits. And the other 4 bits, we have 7 bits, right? 3 bits are the instructions, the first 3. The last 4 bits are the name of the variable that is involved in the operation. Notice how there's always, in all the instructions, there's accumulator, always accumulator, and there's always a variable. And so the remaining 4 bits are which variable is involved in this operation. And you can see why you cannot have 2 variables involved in the same operations, because you only have 4 bits, and each variable name takes 4 bits. So there's no way to show 2 variables at the same time. Okay. So if we have accumulator equals accumulator or A, that will be 0, 0, 0, and then the code for A is 0, 0, 0, 0. And we're going to do a few of these right now. And so let's say we have accumulator equals accumulator or variable, like A. Accumulator equals accumulator or A. And so what is the instruction? What are the 7 bits? And I think we just did this one. So this is just saying, take A and the accumulator and put them through an OR gate. So compute what OR is between whatever's in the accumulator, whatever's in A, and then dump the result back in the accumulator. And, you know, I put this again here because we have to figure out what is the instruction, so what are the 3 bits. So having accumulator equals accumulator or A, we're going to use this one. So it's going to be 0, 0, 0, the first bits. And then the last bits are going to be 0, 0, 0, 0 because A is involved in the operation. So for the type of operation, the code is 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. And then for the variable that's involved, the code is 0, 0, 0, 0. So that's the code for the operation. If you have something like accumulator equals not D, okay, so which one of these operations are we going to use? What is the code for it? That's might be easier to answer. Nobody? So again, it's accumulator equals not D. Yeah. It's 0, 1, 1, right? Because we have accumulator equals not variable. And then what are the other 4 bits? Yes, 0, 0, 1, 1, because that's the code for D. So 0, 1, 1 for the kind of instruction that it is, and then 0, 0, 1, 1 for the variable that's involved in the instruction. So that's how you build these instructions. And now we have to build up, right? We have to take a complicated instruction. Well, not complicated, but something that is not in this in the set that we can use. And we have to break it down into these simpler instructions that our machine language can use. So notice A equals B is not in this set because we don't have variable 1 equals variable 2. So we have to break this down into simpler instructions. Okay? So how are we going to do it? Well, if we can picture, you know, a box for each variable, a box for the accumulator, a box for A, and a box for B. And let's say that A is true. And we want to copy, what does this mean? You take whatever's in B and you dump it in A. I think I did B equals A, actually. Okay. So what we do is we copy what's in, so notice how, again, there's in all these instructions, there's accumulator and there's variables. We have to go somehow through the accumulator. We're going to say accumulator takes the value of A, and then, so that's going to become true. And then we dump the value from the accumulator in B. And again, that's where the instruction B equals A, not A equals B, because I said B equals A means take whatever's in A and dump it in B. So that's going to make, here we say whatever's in the accumulator, put it in B. And so because in the accumulator is storing the value that was in A, we're going to have the same value now in B. And so we copied B, whatever was in A, we put it in B, going through the accumulator. You have to do that, if you want to work with the machine language. Another thing is if you want to do A equals B or C. So let's say B equals false and C equals true. They can be something else, but you have to work with the accumulator. So first step would be to compute what is B or C, okay? And we can't do that directly because we don't have instructions for it. So what we're going to do is We look at, okay, we need to make an OR. Which are the instructions that help us do OR? Well, it's either the first instruction or this instruction. Do you guys have any questions? If there is any question, like, feel free to interrupt, okay? So, making an OR operations, we have to choose the simple OR operations that we're allowed to use. And so those are these two operations. So we can choose one of them. It doesn't really matter which one it is. We're going to say that accumulator, okay, for if we want to use either of these operations, accumulator needs to be involved. Notice how this is an OR between the accumulator and the variable. So we need one of the sides of the OR, one of the variables that is involved in the OR, we need it to be in the accumulator. We need to copy that in the accumulator. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to use the instruction. And so we definitely need to copy one of them, and we chose B in the accumulator. So now accumulator holds B. So now we can do B or C, right? We can do accumulator or C. And because accumulator stores the value of B, in the accumulator is going to store B or C. So now we have, we use this first, then we use this one, and that's going to store B or C in the accumulator. And then we can just dump this in A, and then A will hold the value of B or C. So, and we use the variable equals accumulator, which is A equals accumulator. So copying it, and now we have in A, we're going to have whatever B or C is. Okay? So that's how we break down the complicated instructions into simpler instructions. And that's the memory of the computer is just a huge file cabinet that stores value. It would be as if I would give each one of you the last, I would tell you to memorize a number. And then I would say, you know, chair, the number 10 on the fourth row, tell me your number. And that's exactly what the processor does. It knows it's like every single memory location has some kind of address. And the processor can ask what's stored at your address. And then the memory location can say it's 2 or 3 or true or false or whatever it is. And so each memory location can store a value. And you have to remember where you put those values in order to be able to retrieve them. And the processor and the operating systems usually do this work. You don't have to worry about it. And so what if we wanted to store 100 values? Let's say we want to work with 100 factories. And each factory has, I don't know, however much sugar they produce. And we want to remember that. We want to see, you know, which one of them does well, which one of them doesn't do well. You know, maybe we're the manager or CEO and we want to, shut down some of them or not efficient. We would need to remember 100 numbers. And how can we do that? Well, in Scratch, let's say you use Scratch for that, you have to come up with 100 variables. And you have to, of course, come up with a name for each variable. And you can call them, if you want to call them plants, fruits, and vegetable names. But there must be a better way to do that. And the better way is to use a list. And I'm going to show you how to use lists in Scratch. And we're going to do the lab is going to be about lists. We're going to do problems, homework and exam problems with lists. So a list of variables is basically, you might want to have 100 variables. And you can order them in a list. And they're going to be easier to deal with, and they're going to be easier to access. And you don't have to think of names for everybody, for all the variables. So you can either call them ABC through whatever, let's say through Z, which is not 100, but there's still a lot. Or you can just see the whole thing as, the whole group of variables as, a unit, and call that a list. And the way you access the elements in the list, the variables in the list, is you say, you know, the first element is going to be called the first element in the list. the fifth element is going to be called the fifth element in the list, and so on. And so you can either call them A, B, C, D through, here's through K, or you can just say, instead of calling them the letter, you just say item 1 of L. And that's how Scratch sees, if you make a list in Scratch, it's under variables, you can say item 1 of L, and that's going to be the first one, item 5 of L, which is going to be the fifth one, and so on. And you address them by that. If you want to put something in the list, you're going to say item 1 of L is 5, or item 1 of L equals 5. And that's going to say, take 5, take what's on the right-hand side of the equal, and dump it in the first element of the list. And so if I want to say something like item 7 of L equals item 1 of L plus 4, that's going to put, that's going to take, okay, what is item 1 of L? That's 5. Add 4 to it, and then dump it in the seventh element of the list. So this is very tricky. I mean, it might make sense right now, but it's very, I think it can be confusing to you to use item 7, but the item 7 is not necessarily the number 7. Item 7 just says, go in the list, the seventh location, and put something in it, right? Or like, put 5 in the seventh element in the list. So if you want to make a list, this is what it's going to look like in Scratch. And you can have 1, 2, 3. So it's going to show you, these numbers are item number. So item number 1 is going to be 4. Item number 2 is going to be 0, and so on. You can have replace the items. So if you do replace item 1 of var, var is the list, with 4, that's going to put 4 in here, and so on. And you can also do, say item 1 of var plus item 6 of var for 2 seconds. So what is that going to say? What is the, if you run the script, what is the script going to say? Or the, what's it going to say? 25, yeah, exactly. Okay, so this is exactly how memory works. Memory is a huge list of numbers. It doesn't have item. Actually, it does. It has item 1 through item tons and tons and tons. If you have a big memory, if you have 1 gig of memory, that's 1 billion. And so usually, what the processor says is, item number 235, what is stored in your location? And then item number 235 says it's 2, whatever, the number is stored. And so that's kind of like the circuit that the memory is, a very simplified memory circuit. If you have 32 memory locations, each one will have a 5-bit number. So if you want to... You have 32 numbers. How many bits do you need to make 32 numbers? Well, you have, 0, if you have 5 bits, you're going to be able to make, this is going to be the lowest location. You're going to go all the way up to 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. What is that in decimal? Convert 1, 1, 1, 1, 1 to decimal.
31.
31. Right? So it's 1, 2, 4, 8, 16. So this is 10 plus 20, 30, 31. So you have 0 to 31, that's 32 numbers that you can write with 5 bits. And so if you have a 5-bit processor, you can have a 32-bit memory, 32 locations of memory, and each number is going to be called the address of the memory location. And so if you wanted to make to access that, you would have to make some kind of if-then-else, you're going to have to use some kind of if-then-else circuit, because, the processor is going to say, I need the number that is at location 7, and you're going to be, you know, each location is going to say, am I location 7? If I am, I'm going to send my information to the processor. If I'm not, I'm not going to send my information to the processor. And so I think I'm going to skip these. So going back to our instructions. So this was just to show you the way to the connection between this very simple machine language and the way the computer works. Basically, A through P, those variables, can be like the memory. And the processor has a very simple logic, and it has an accumulator, which is a local, it's a variable that's inside the processor, but then it can also use A, B, and C through P to make instructions. And so it's like the memory. Of course, the memory has way more locations than that, but it's very similar to it. And so we have a little program that can show if you go through each of these instructions, what happens and how the variables change. And that's the big architecture of a computer. It's called the von Neumann architecture. And it's the diagram that I showed you before. And basically, one cycle of the processor takes everything that's in the memory, the accumulator. This kind of says, where are we? What instruction are we executing now? And runs it through the circuit, and it gives the new memory content, the new accumulator, and so on. And so the program counter is a very important variable, because it says, okay, we're done with instruction 2, now we're moving on to instruction 3. We're done with instruction 3, and so if at any point something happens to your computer, the program counter, if it's saved, it can say exactly, oh, here's where the problem happened. And so the program counter gives you the instruction number that that you're executing. And so everything, as it's coming out of the processor, it's going back into, just like the state machine, the new values become the old values, and they get run through this whole cycle again. And so, you know, see how the memory gets updated, and the accumulator gets updated, the program counter, you know, I'm done with instruction 2, I can move on to instruction 3, and so on. And this can be a whole computer. If we wanted to make it out of all the gates that we learned, it's, you know, it looks very complicated. This is the memory. This gives the address of the variable that I want to look at and the variable that I want to use. And then I have all kinds of if-then-elses and stuff like that. It's a very complicated structure. But again, it can be made out of these very separate structures that each have a very well-assigned role. And so the instruction set that we came up with, which is called ML cubed, which is totally made up by Michael Littman, who invented this class. He designed it, and he designed it so that it would be simple, and it could also deal with 2-bit additions. And when computer manufacturers make these languages, they have something in mind. They always want to make something that reduces the speed, or maybe something that reduces the cost, or something that makes it easy to program in that language, and so on. And, you know, in real life, these are some of the instructions that people actually program in, you know, real-life machine language. And this is the Intel's processor, and you can see that there's tons and tons and tons of instructions. And, you know, you don't really want to do that. You know, it's a very, you know, if you take computer science, it's pretty hardcore computer science class. But each of these instructions represents a very, very small, tiny operations that's very close to hardware. and that can be implemented in hardware. For example, I'm trying to find something that we would be able to understand. Like ADD is arithmetic addition. So that's a very simple instruction that the processor has a circuit for, and it can just add two numbers bit by bit. There's all kinds of load. Load means take from memory into the processor. Take from ABC through P and put it into your processor. Store. Store goes the other way. Store says accumulator. Take what's in the accumulator and dump it in memory, and so on. But there's tons and tons and tons of them. This is for a cell phone. So people who make cell phones need to program them. And the on the lowest level, people who make the operating systems of the cell phones need to deal with these kinds of instructions. And so they need to know what all these instructions are. And you know, you can see it's pretty tedious. So this shows what these numbers mean are the bit numbers. So this is the 0th bit, and this is the 31st bit. Each of these instructions is 32 bits. And so it's saying if you want to do multiply, then apparently cell phones need to multiply a lot. You're going to have to use the first 3 bits to do this this field, which I don't know what it is. Then you have to do 1001, then you have to fill out this field, then you have to fill out this field, and so on. So this is just showing the kinds of instructions that are the machine language instructions for cell phones. And that's what they're gonna show. They're gonna look like. And so we had this diagram before. We had the going from very simple low complexity to very high complexity. And we said that the machine language actually bridges this gap. And I think I would like to do an example of a problem with machine language, just so you have an idea before I move on, or before we finish. So there can be problems that look like this in one of the future homework and on the machine. Something like you have a whole series of instructions, like A equals accumulator, or B, C equals accumulator, A equals accumulator, or B, and whatever was in the accumulator, and it would be become accumulator or B. So C or B. And then I do accumulator equals A. So I take whatever was in A and I dump it in the accumulator.
Expression trees.